You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're sitting quietly in the corner like we've been told to. Wait, what the hell? That doesn't sound like the midside. I'm your host, Justin M. Wozneski, and if you're like me right now, you're feeling a little confused, a little bit sad, then you have found yourself in the right place. You know, old school midsiders, glad to have you back, glad to have you here going through this experience with us. If you have any friends that are having similar reactions, send them our way. Send them our way so we can get them involved in this discussion, get them involved in what living is like nowadays. And I think that's mainly going to be the topic of today's episode, is what is living like? Because I want to pivot a little bit here. I want to pivot a little bit away from talking about the virus all the time. And we'll get into that a little bit, why I want to pivot away from that. But first, I have to introduce my co-host. Joining me from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Hope everyone out there is enjoying your Corona economy, or as some people on Twitter are calling it, the Great Suppression, which I feel like is a perfect term for what we're going through right now. Hasn't really hit me yet all that hard. My job security is fine for the time being, and my wife worked one day a week anyway, so being laid off from a one day a week job, not that huge an impact. Although the impact that I'm experiencing is certainly not being able to go out and enjoy my life like we did before. So that part sucks, not going to lie. But we have a bar downstairs, which is nice. We can pretend like we're going out somewhere.
That's excellent that you have that bar to help you. I think that the term is so good because it applies beyond economics, Daniel. I mean, I'm fortunate that I made the pivot at apparently the exact right time, moving to Florida and becoming a public school teacher, because they're continuing to pay me. I'm assuming my job is safe because it's considered essential services, so I can't imagine they would cut teachers or anything during this time, although who knows with the way this could get. But the main effects on me have been psychological, and that's why we're approaching this show a little bit different this week.
Thank goodness.
Also joining us, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, from Dale's Lawn, William Green.
Hello, hello. Mixing up a bit today, Justin. I like it.
Yeah, I did it in reverse order. It's because I'm not reading off of a paper this time.
Yeah, we're flying without an outline today.
Yeah.
Safety's off.
Is it really going to be that different?
No, not at all.
Do we ever follow the outline?
I don't know why I use the outline. It's like training wheels at this point. Like, I think we've all internalized the flow of the show to the point that we don't need it, but we're all so used to it that we just keep it there as like a safety.
Yeah. I like reading along with it. It makes me feel like this is like a show.
Yeah.
And like something that's produced
eventually.
And isn't just something I'm literally doing from my basement.
Well, I love how you guys went in two different directions there. William was like, yeah, this will end eventually. And you're like, oh, it makes me feel more professional and not so weirdo in my basement. We're all weirdos in our basements right now, Daniel. You haven't realized that yet?
I was just ahead of the curve.
Yes, we were ahead of the curve. We've always been ahead of the curve. So why don't we continue being ahead of the curve here instead of flattening it? And let's just move on instead of talking about the virus, and let's just talk about what it's like to live nowadays in Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. This life really sucks. Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and smile. Yeah. So, I was going to say some big intro thing, but we have some live listeners today, and one of them just dropped a meme in the general channel here on Discord. So if you want to get involved in the conversation now or during the week, get into our Discord channel. You can go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast, click on any episode, and in the inside the episode post, there will be a link to join the Discord. One of the listeners just popped in this meme, and it says, never ask a woman her age, a man his salary, or the Chinese government how many deaths there have been in the coronavirus outbreak.
So that was I will say, the meme again. The meme game has been strong during the Great Suppression. So,
well, and that's the thing, Daniel, not to dwell on this topic, but that's the sort of one thing that gives me hope, is calling it the Great Suppression and the meme game starting to come out where people are talking about these things shows me that the American spirit may not be dead, that people actually are starting to see things for the way they are rather than just being compliant.
It may be on a ventilator, but it's not dead yet.
Was the ventilator supplied by the Chinese, though? That's the question.
It will be supplied by GM, apparently, if our grand dictator-in-chief has his way.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other topic. But, I mean, I don't know.
It was Patrick Henry's anniversary of his Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech recently, and I did see a couple memes cropping up that were something to the effect of Give Me Liberty or a $1,200 check.
Yeah, I saw that one as well. And William, pre-show, you were asking if we were going to hear one of the podcasts, right? Did you just hear?
Yeah, I just heard the podcast. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I told you, the second I started talking, she ran over here and was like, oh, wait, I could be on the recording too? I'm important? I don't know what your guys' experiences have been, but the reason I didn't want to do the news this week is because the news is all about the virus, and we're just inundated with it. And me, personally, my experiences is even if I'm not reading the news and paying attention to what's going on, even if it's just something as simple as, like, I binged a lot of season one of Boy Meets World this past week. First of all, it's a phenomenal show. I miss it. If anyone's looking for something to watch and you're on Disney Plus, watch that. I mean, the difference in just the way life was back then. People talk about the 50s and the way life was. The 90s American sitcom looks different than today. It looks like a fucking alien planet. But even just watching that, like, no matter what I'm doing, I just have these random waves of, like, grief pass over me. It's very strange. And today is the first day I haven't felt like I've been in a depressive state. And honestly, it has to do with that Zack Snyder just went on Vero, and for 3 hours, he did a live stream commentary of the Batman versus Superman Ultimate Edition, where he had us pause ours at the beginning, pause his. He started the movie, we started at the same time, and then he just talked. It was like a live commentary track, and it was really cool. And I did live tweeting along with that, picking out what I thought were the key things he was saying, and just having that sort of affirming experience where it felt like there was a social experience where there were other human beings out there that I could connect with on a level that was productive, and it was moving life forward rather than just simply, okay, now we're stuck in this static place. Because one of the things I've been very aware of is Atlas Shrugged. And I'm interested, have either of you thought about this? How in Atlas Shrugged, there was this thing where they tried to stop everything. If we can just stop everything and catch our breath, everything will be okay. As that society is declining, right, declining into anarchy, declining into collapse, the government just tries to pass laws to stop. If we just stop and slow things down, everything will be okay. And that's the sort of sense I've been getting about what we're trying to do as a society. If we all just stop, we'll flatten the curve and everything will be okay. Oh, okay, you know, when the economy is doing this, oh, well, if we pass these laws about the economy, and if we make sure these companies are paying people when they're not working, everything will be okay. As long as everything stays the same and we stop, the virus will stop, we'll flatten the curve, and everything will be okay. It's really reminded me of that part of Atlas Shrugged. Have either of you had that thought?
Yeah, I was talking with Faiza about that the other day, and the various directives that were coming out that seemed very 10-286, is that right?
Yes.
And then also the president ordering GM to make ventilators. You know, GM with their great expertise in breathing equipment. And it just, it's all seemed a bit surreal, but I was thinking about it in the context, not just of Atlas Shrugged or of Halting, but how, you know, being averse to change, being averse to changing situations is such a universal thing. And I'm not saying universal in the sense that every individual is averse to change, but what I mean is, especially people who aren't thinking long term, like when you and it's a stage of grief, right? It's has to do with not being able to come to terms with the situation now and saying, well, if we can just stop things, if we can go back to the way they were and just hold it there, then life will be fine. When my girlfriend breaks up with me, if I can just go back to that moment in our relationship just before the breakup, everything will be fine if we can just hold it in that position forever. When in fact, being better at understanding that things are going to change all the time and sometimes can change rapidly, and letting people change rapidly and letting people figure it out, letting people use their mind to solve the problems is so much better on every level than trying to hold everything in place.
And I think, Daniel, what you're saying is, I think there are two sides to that that are making me feel sad. It's one, the trying to make people stay in place is inhibiting us from being able to be ingenious, to have that ingenuity, to be able to solve this problem. And two, the other side of that is, I don't think people are understanding that this is the new normal. Maybe I'm being crazy, but I keep hearing people say, if we just get through this, everything will be okay. And I keep hearing numbers thrown around, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 18 months. Or they'll say, oh, the virus is going to come back next winter, next spring. And until somebody says you're released and Disney World is reopened, I don't have any belief that this isn't the new normal for life. And the fact that, A, we're all evading reality as a culture by thinking we can just slow down and stop everything is making me sad. And B, that we think that this isn't the new normal is making me sad. That people think that this is temporary is making me sad.
Well, William, to add on to that, imagine what the response culturally, sense of life, whatever, will be like if things maybe not don't go back to normal, but get quote unquote better, and it's linked to this kind of standstill policy. Basically, what I'm saying is, can you imagine the consequences for us for generations if government and voters think, yeah, that one time when we've told the economy to sit the hell down for the sake of this virus, that fixed everything. So maybe we should keep doing that.
I'm not, William, you can talk in a second, but I'm not comfortable saying the economy all the time. It's really life that's stopped and slowed down, not just the economy.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I'm using shorthand.
But it's tough because very few people are, a few people are in targeted areas championing people actually improving through technology or science or knowledge and reducing the risk, right? But we're seeing the politicians constantly use their authority, right, to expand their authority in this case, and instead of letting people do things of their own free will. And that's kind of what's a little scary to me. We're not letting people make choices, right? And holding them accountable for the consequences. We are saying, oh, you know what? A bunch of people at the beach last weekend were too close together, so we're going to close the beaches, right? You know, people may sit closer than 6 feet apart at a restaurant, so we'll close all the insides of all restaurants, right? People go outside. They may stand close together. Let's have the police harass them and find out why they're outside sitting at a park. We're using a lot of force here, right? And that if that's going to be the new normal, as Justin fears, then yeah, that's a big problem.
And it's not just the government giving us consequences. if we do bad things. It's, why don't we let people get bad consequences in reality? And what I mean is, and this is going to come off really harsh and people are going to be like, oh, blah, 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 Ubermensch, whatever, whatever the fuck you want to say, go ahead. But if you're going to be, if this is really that dangerous of a virus and you're going to be that dumb about it, why aren't we comfortable saying, well, if you're going to fucking do that, you're going to get sick? Why aren't we comfortable saying that? I mean, don't we do that on a small scale? Like, if your friend's going to make a bad choice and you're like, yo, if you look at the hot crazy scale, that girl's way above the crazy part of the hot crazy scale. Don't do it. And then he dates her and she goes crazy. Don't you go to him, well, you know, it sucks, but we told you she was crazy. Why is it okay then, but now it's not okay? Why am I the
crazy
asshole?
Girl isn't going to collapse his lungs or anything, but
she might. There's fucking, we accept Carrie Underwood singing a song about how she's slashing people's tires, and we go, oh, well, she was cheated on. That's justified. Yeah? Getting cheated on justifies slashing some dude's tires? We accept that from women in our society?
Yeah, I mean, look, it has to do with this, the idea that this virus is a social problem. It's not an individual problem. And I'm just telling you, can talk back against this, as I know you both will momentarily, but because if you get sick, you can transmit it to other people. If you get sick, you can collapse the healthcare system. If you get sick, you can cost me money. And so I think people's first inclination with that kind of thing that appears to be a social problem is to say, well, there have to be social costs. We have to take things away from everyone so we can lower the risk to everyone. Now, there's a lot to unpack there because there are things about it that are true, but that doesn't mean that they necessarily lead to a social solution or lead to to use a more pointed word, a collectivist solution. So the fact that the virus is transmittable to other people is absolutely correct, and people could injure me even unknowingly if they get the virus. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the collective actions that we've taken are the right actions to take.
There are consequences too.
Individualistic thinking about this, Justin.
If Carrie Underwood is slashing your tires, there are consequences to that too. Somebody's going to have to install new tires. Somebody's going to have to make new tires. Somebody's going to have to drive you to and from the dealership, which is going to help you get the tires. They may have to help you with the money. There are consequences to everything. This is something that we brought up years ago, Daniel, and William, maybe you remember this. But the idea that they're trying to make the concept of economic externalities into moral externalities, where they're trying to say, yeah, oh, you're responsible for any possible consequences of your actions, intended or not. And you can't live that way.
Right, because even if, I mean, someone will find a moral externality, right? That's part
That's
of the
social
whole wokeness
justice movement. Yeah.
Yeah, that is wokeness, but put in economic terms, is that there is a moral externality to everything, and we will show you what it is. And you're right. It makes it literally impossible to live because you no longer are your choices about you, the individual, and your values. Your choices are necessarily about every other person on the planet, which is debilitating in so many ways.
All right, let's move on from this. And one of the things we did was we asked the listeners, the Midsiders, some questions in our Discord, what they wanted to hear us talk about. We asked it in the Patreon channel. We asked it in the general channel. So we'll just run through some of those. The first was, do people back into parking spots in Florida? I thought I answered this. I thought I discussed this on my my solo episodes, where I talked about the transition to Florida for like three straight fucking hours over two episodes. I thought you'd be sick of this by now, but maybe everybody doesn't listen to every episode. So maybe that's why Adam Carolla repeats the same story on fucking 8 weeks, right? Every episode for 8 weeks, you hear the same story. I haven't noticed that. I do notice pickup trucks doing that, but again, that makes sense to me. That's always made sense to me. I said that when we had that discussion. The thing I've noticed, and I've talked to Daniel about this off air, is if you don't fucking go immediately when a light turns green, you get honked at. You get honked at sometimes before the light turns green and in anticipation. I've never noticed it. Now the lights are longer here than normal, but even if you balance out the traffic, it still doesn't take as much time. I shouldn't say normal. What's normal? The lights are longer than I'm used to having lived in California. But it still doesn't take more time to drive somewhere than it does when you're driving California with the amount of people. But the honking is insane. It's just like, okay, yeah, all right, I'm sorry I don't have like fucking like professional athlete reflexes here to be able to take my foot off the gas. I've actually had it where the guy in front of me didn't go and the guy behind me honked at the guy in front of me for not going. I was just like, really?
Pass-through honk.
Yeah, the pass-through honk, which is funny because in California, no one ever uses the horn. Why do you think that is, Daniel? Why do you think people are overly using the horn here, and why do you think nobody uses a horn in California?
Well, in California, I suspect they're all in their own little world and have no idea what's going on anyway. the narcissism bubble.
Everyone's got their Teslas in automatic, in the autopilot. So that makes it.
They could, in fact, use a couple extra seconds to reply to that text from their agent.
That's true.
They're and in Florida,
up on our Instagram post.
The funny thing, that's right. The thing that I kept thinking of was fear of the old person. That's what I kept thinking about in Florida, which is we need a preemptive honk just in case the person at the light is old and has fallen asleep.
That's what I thought at first, too. But I actually think, and I brought this up to you, is there a racial component to this? Is this now? I don't mean as like it's genetically coded in someone's race, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, culturally, is
very
it something?
Bill Burr.
Well, yeah. Culturally, is there something with Southern black people that makes them honk more?
Hmm. Well, I would say that living in a predominantly black community in Maryland, which is not the South, but it's close to the South. Some of it's the South. Some of it is more South than parts of Virginia. Anyway, point being, the driving here is far more aggressive, far more horns, far more... I wouldn't say reckless behavior, but I would say hurried behavior. Like, I have somewhere to go. I have somewhere to go now. And it's prominently by the black community members. And this isn't something I've just noticed. I mean, one of my dear friends from work, her name is Rhonda. She lives in the same town that I do, and she's black. And
did you ask her to help you?
When I told her, thank you. When I told her I was moving to Temple Hills, literally the first thing she said, not like, great, awesome, love it. She was like, oh, you better make sure your insurance is up to date. I was like, what? First of all, it's always up to date. It's required by law to be up to date. People let their insurance lapse. And two, what? And so we had a talk about driving. So I don't know. Maybe there's something to that. I don't know. I couldn't pinpoint as to why that would be, and nor would I dare. In 2020, discuss why that would be, even conjecture. But I think it's something you've noticed a true condition, I think, Justin.
Right. Very interesting. So that's, I think, what I have to say about driving in Florida so far. I haven't had a lot of time to get used to driving in Florida because I was either working or now I'm not allowed to go anywhere. Although I'm allowed now to drive for Uber Eats. I haven't decided if I want to yet. I don't know if it's worth, you know, the potential exposure. I don't know how bad the exposure would be. Is it actually something of a risk to do that? That's something I'm still thinking about. So I may do that just as a way to pick up extra money. So maybe I'll have more driving stories soon, but I'm also assuming there'll be no one on the road. Although every time I fucking go outside, even if I go to check the mail for 5 seconds, there's people everywhere. Am I the only person staying inside?
I do have that question. William, do you see people around you? Because everyone I know, literally everyone I know, is staying home all the time. And yet, when I see news clips, like there was a farmer's market in D.C. today that was packed on the news.
Yeah, there's a ton of people walking around the neighborhood. I mean, I've been taking the dog around the neighborhood. Traffic, though, has been exceedingly light. I've been able to get to Long Beach and back, no problem. Although it was at least hopeful to see the amount of trucks that were on the 710, which is the highway that leads to the port for the non-California among us. So that was good. There was the two lanes that were going to the port were full and backed up just like a normal traffic day, but the far left lane into downtown Long Beach completely clear. What got me was I went in on Thursday to downtown to do the deposit at the store, and walking the 3/4 of the way round the block to get to the bank, there were literally double the amount of homeless people that I normally see. And that was a little scary, as we talked about last week.
It's like,
I'm very concerned, like, the zombie apocalypse is happening.
Right. It's like the scenes you see of San Francisco where the coyotes are starting to run the streets. When there's fewer people, more homeless people come out of the wilderness and into the cities.
And these weren't the sort of fake homeless people, you know, the ones with cell phones and drug issues. These were the, you know, talking to their cart style. So having in-depth conversations, philosophical debates with their imaginary friend in their cart. So pretty scary.
I think that's exactly what it is, Daniel. I think it is they're coming out of hiding because there's fewer people to shoo them away or scare them away.
Yeah, it's interesting. But what would compel someone to go to a farmer's market, for instance? Is artisanal cheese worth the pneumonia?
In a word, yes.
Oh, well, okay, I shouldn't have used cheese as the example.
In multiple words, though, I'm okay with it. This is people pursuing their values. And as I said before, I'm okay with it. Take precautions. Put on a mask.
I'm not...
Everyone's talking about making masks. Take a fucking scarf out of your closet, right? Like, this doesn't have to be complicated.
Can't you just pull your sweatshirt up or your t-shirt up over your face?
I do that every time you enter the room, Justin. Just to...
I guess I'm not okay with it. I'm more just surprised because the only talk I see ever on any platform all day long is flatten the curve, social distance, you're an evil person for going outside. And I guess it's just shocking to me, maybe in a sense of life, Justin, America isn't screwed type of way, that some people are like, nah, I need some organic tomatoes.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And again, it's the dichotomy between the internet and real life and the real world. And I think one of the things that we should, and I hope we address after this is done, quote unquote, if it ever is done, is how we balance that. Because I think a large part of this, and no one will ever convince me otherwise, a large part of this, well, let me walk that back. There's two things going on here to me. It's either a large part of this panic is influenced by the internet culture and the idea that we're stuck in this mindset of we're going to have negativity pumped into our brains over and over again all day. And that's part of what I've been aware of while watching, you know, Boy Meets World, is the things that they have problems with and the conflicts within those episodes would be considered quaint and simple nowadays because they don't have a global perspective, right? Everything is, oh, what's going on with our family? Oh, you know, what's going on with our brother, our sister, our next door neighbor, who's our teacher, all that kind of stuff, our parents. You know, one episode is Corey and Eric find out their mother is sneaking around. Well, it turns out the mother's sneaking around so she can have some alone time with the dad, and she got caught and the dad didn't get caught sneaking around. Like, people would be like, what is this nowadays? But that's what life really is, right? It's not everything else. So it's either that, and we have to eventually reckon with that and deal with that and say, what is the place this has in our life? Why are we allowing it to dictate so much of our mindset in the world? Why are we letting it to influence our psychology, our ideas, our decision makings? It's either that, or there's more going on to this quote-unquote virus, and the government's not telling us. That this is the conclusion I've come to. It's either
I think there's something in between those two.
Okay. All right. I mean, if they came out and they were like, by the way, this was a bioweapon, we just didn't all want to tell you, I'd be like, okay, that makes sense. because of the extreme the extremeness of the reaction we're going through right
this
now.
This is the part of the show where you can pull out your tinfoil hats and place them upon your head, and then the government won't listen in.
I think it's more likely that we're all just fucking ourselves with the use of the internet. That's what I think is more likely. I'm just saying, either of those explanations would satisfy me.
Next question.
All right, next question. So this one's a question for William. Scrolling up to it. What's the best ammo caliber to stock up for when society collapses? Also, I'm going to add to this. I don't own a gun. Should I buy a gun? Because right now, if the government comes into my house to like take me or my cats, I can just throw Funko Pops at them.
Your girlfriend's okay, but not cat or you.
Well, I'm here alone in Florida. She's still okay. In California.
Okay. Hey, I was the only one that was odd where you said the cats and usually.
She's in California. They're all in fucking police state, right?
Yeah, she's game over, man. She's gone. Just warn her now. the best caliber is the one for the gun you have. So I don't know how to answer that any other way. Certainly,
it's gotta be.
Certainly for home defense. Shotgun. I prefer shotguns for home defense. People love their rifles, especially .223. I don't know that there's a good answer. It's basically whatever you're comfortable shooting with, and it's a lot to do with the kind of environment you live in. I have a 9mm handgun here, and I have my AR here, and that's what I plan on using for any defensive purposes. I do not have any shotguns here. I probably should. And Justin, if you're looking for a gun, now is probably not a good time. I'm sure prices are crazy right now with everyone stocking up. But we certainly could explore what would be the most comfortable thing, because it's always about what you are most comfortable shooting. That is way more important than what caliber your bullet happens to be.
I just want to get a gun for free in a rifle raffle.
Good old South Carolina in our bowling days in Clemson, when we would go and every Tuesday there would be a rifle raffle. 6 tickets for $5. You could win a rifle.
I'm kind of disappointed nowadays. Like, looking back, it's one of those, maybe I should have entered that rifle raffle one week. I'd have a rifle right now, probably. Odds are, right, with the number of weeks we bowled.
Oh, yeah. Easily. We'd have a couple. A couple between us.
What are you guys talking about for the zombie apocalypse? Nah, we just bowl a lot.
I'm never going to own a gun. I'm not comfortable shooting a gun. I'm not anti-gun. I'm totally pro Second Amendment. Everyone should have guns. Just not me. So my plan is to lure any potential government or burglar or assailant into my house with an elaborate set of Home Alone style traps. And then sick my Yorkie on them.
Why has no one done a cross? Speaking of that, why has no one done a crossover of Home Alone and The Diary of Anne Frank?
I don't know. Maybe it's your time.
I thought that would get a bigger reaction, but that seems like an SNL skit that hasn't been made yet. But all right. So next question we have here, and this is a good one for things to do during this time. What content, books, blogs, what the hell are they, do you guys recommend? I found my social media feeds particularly intolerable at this time. Yeah, I think we all feel that way. And I've been digging up interesting things to read, stuff that's engaging and thoughtful and not some recycled BS from the leaders. Well,
yeah, I agree. Recycled BS from Twitter's the leaders. Been toxic lately. I got into it with Yaron Brooke this weekend. So
What?
Yeah. Spill We're the tea, need to hear more about that.
Well, you can see it all on my stream. He was spouting the typical Trump is an evil dictator stuff. And I was like, hey, this isn't going to change people's minds. And then people all jumped in saying, what? You're not supposed to, pass moral judgment? And I'm like, it's the how, not the what. That's the problem here. Just sounding like the mainstream media is not going to convince any people who like Trump to come to your side. right?
Yeah, it's like, we're different from the mainstream media, but we say exactly the same thing, right?
Yeah, we approach the problem exactly the same way, right? Yeah.
So I can tell you what content not to, to view. I watched Frozen 2.
Oh.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, my God. I didn't think the ideas could be more repugnant than the first, but they were. So the first thing is, basically what's evil about the entire movie is at one point her dad went and conquered the native peoples, basically.
With his white privilege?
Yeah, it was basically like America. It was like the whole thing became a metaphor for when Columbus came over here and killed the indigenous peoples. As if Columbus himself was like, fuck all you people, like, here's some smallpox blankets, right? Like, and as if that made the entire concept of the country undermined. They even addressed it. They were like, we know that's not what Arendelle stands for, so we have to write this wrong. It's like, we made a movie about this? Like, you somehow found a way to pivot worse than the anti-masculinity in the first one, but then they continued the anti-masculinity too. So you know how Kristoff is like the guy who's like the goofy, stupid guy who's in love with Anna? Well, the entire movie he's trying to propose to her and she's just ignoring him because who's she obsessed with? Her sister. Right? Daniel, is that a red flag if you're trying to propose to a woman and she's more worried about her sister than you?
I'd say it doesn't bode well.
Okay.
For your relationship.
I'd say it's a red flag. And he even sings a song about it, right? He's like, oh man, you know, she's ignoring me, blah, blah. And there's a whole metaphorical song. And then at the end of the movie, she apologizes to him. He proposes. And he says, don't worry about it. My love is not fragile. That's a direct quote.
Oh my God.
My love is not fragile. So they've somehow built into this a critique of the idea of fragile masculinity.
Quick, hopeful romantic here. Jeez.
Well, I mean, that was the underscore of what was saying, but I mean, I already said what I've been watching, right? I mean, I've been watching All Boy Meets World. I would recommend things like that. I would recommend older stuff, right? Like, go watch all of Deep Space Nine. Go watch the first five seasons of Lost. Go watch all of House. Go watch Mad Men. These are the shows that I find life-affirming, and to me, that's the stuff that's going to really matter. I mean, even, like I said, just the experience today of watching for the, you know, 108th time Batman versus Superman, but hearing Snyder's commentary during it, that was very life-affirming to me. So
I
stuff
think we
like
mentioned
that.
It a couple weeks ago, but rewatch V for Vendetta. Maybe not as life-affirming, but definitely will steal your resolve a bit.
Yeah, and for me, I tried to watch something like Chernobyl. I watched the first two episodes, and let me be clear, this is a well-made show, and I get the point of it. It's excellent. But the whole point of it is communist governments are evil and let their own people die when fucked up shit happens. And I'm watching it and I'm just getting more and more depressed because, I mean, does that not sound like what's going on right now? So I think it's also carefully looking at the content of what you're watching. And what I mean by that is, what is it about? Things that are not going to remove you from reality. You're not trying to evade reality, but you're trying to shift your focus to what matters and what is helpful to you, what your values are. That's why something like House or something like Mad Men or something like Boy Meets World, where they're all about characters who are trying to figure the world out and how to be happy in the world and how to be successful in the world, are what I turn to right now, what makes me feel better, what to me is what life is about. Are there any shows that or any movies you guys would recommend in this sense?
I'm going to take the not visual route, not audio route, because he did talk about things that you could read, and say that there are several books that were very, I'm not going to call them life-affirming books, but they're insanely insightful into how they look at the world, that are generally applicable, although I read them in the context of my professional communications degree. So one is called The Design of Everyday Things by Donald Norman. And the book was originally called The Psychology of Everyday Things, which I think is actually a better title, because while the book is a book about how things are designed, it really is a book about how you think and how people think. And the first chapter, which is a famous chapter now, is all about doors. I know that sounds like, oh my God, a chapter about doors. But it's fascinating look at the psychology of doors and why we're all terrible at opening doors. And it's not because we're all dumb. It's because doors, for the most part, are so poorly designed that it really Fs with our head.
Does he agree with Adam Carolla about the way handles and stuff are done?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Why would you put a handle on anything you have to push, for instance? That makes no sense whatsoever. Handles are for pulling.
Hey, can I ask a question? And maybe you guys aren't the best person to answer this, but maybe you are because you've read this chapter. Is it that hard to make a double hinge where you can push the door both ways?
It's not that hard. It is, you know, marginally more expensive, and so people don't want to do
it. That's the only reason.
I think it's marginally more expensive. Also reliability and security. There's reliability and security issues while not to do that. You'll notice that exterior doors, where the hinges are very important. If the hinges are outside, it's not an exterior door.
Security door makes sense.
Yeah.
That's a good answer. I appreciate that explanation. Thank you.
That makes much more sense than mine. Let's see. Other books that I think are particularly fascinating that you might have time to read now. The Forgotten Man by Amity Schley, A New History of the New Deal. Fascinating look at what was going on during the Great Depression and the economic policies that made it worse. And I think the book is insightful because it just relies so heavily on FDR's cabinet's personal journal entries. So it's very frank conversation because they don't think they're writing to anyone. And it's it was incredible to read. And then finally, a book called Nature's God, The Heretical Origins of the American Republic by Matthew Stewart, which I thought was going to be a quaint history book about the phrase nature's God and where it comes from. And it turns out it's a pretty heavy book on philosophy and epistemology, but fascinating, and how he ties it all into the American Revolution and going back to classic thinkers as far back as Epicurus and then Aristotle, of course. So check those out if you have time. I have other book recommendations, but that should be enough for a couple weeks.
So, William, before you go, there was a comment put in the chat here, a quote from The Way of the Samurai. It says, it is bad when one thing becomes two. One should not look for anything else in the way of the samurai. It is the same for anything that is called a way. If one understands things in this manner, he should be able to hear about all ways and be more and more in accord with his own. The question is, should you avoid ideas that contradict your own? I wasn't talking about avoiding ideas that contradict your own. I was talking about fueling your art with your soul with art in tough times. And I'm not saying you have to avoid things that are ideologically different right now. I'm saying to avoid things that you know are going to be personally damaging to your psyche and your emotional state. Like right now, Chernobyl agrees with me, I would say. Have either of you seen Chernobyl?
No.
No.
William?
No.
No. So I would say it agrees with me. I would say its general assessment of the world agrees with me, but I would basically call it a horror movie, a horror series. They would probably call it psychological thriller or psychological drama, right? But I would call it a horror series. So it's not that I disagree with it. I'm telling you to avoid things you disagree with. I'm telling you to avoid things that you know are going to make your experience worse, because I believe we're in times that are very tough emotionally and psychologically. At least that's my experience of what's going on right now.
Good point.
So, William, what about you? Do you have any recommendations?
Well, I would say play some games with some friends. I've been playing a ton of League of Legends. I've been playing the new Doom. And some... What else have I been playing? Oh, I downloaded... at least to play by myself when my friends aren't online, I've been playing Black Mesa, which is a remake of Half-Life 1, a fan-made remake that is quite enjoyable. So, yeah, I would say find those things that you that are normally maybe lower priority on your value hierarchy and enjoy those values while you are in this suspended animation.
That actually answers the next question, or leads into the answer of the next question, is how can we live life to the fullest given our current constraints? And I've actually started playing a video game. Wow, I never game. But remember on the show, William, where I talked about how I felt guilty and I had a hard time getting into the new South Park game because it was so intense. It was so detailed. Well, I started playing it again and I was able to enjoy it because I didn't feel like, hey, my life is going to be derailed by playing this game because my life's already been derailed. So now I have time to do this. So I was actually able to enjoy it in a better way. Do you guys have any other answers to that question?
I think I kind of gave mine, though.
So. Yeah, so I was more throwing it to Daniel.
One thing I find just generally therapeutic, not just in the time of Corona, is just writing. And I don't mean writing an op-ed. I mean writing anything that comes to mind. Anything. Don't have to think of it as journaling. It doesn't have to be structured. Just write. When you write, you clarify. And I think that clarity allows you to be a little bit more at peace with your thoughts and with what you believe and what's going on, your emotions even, because it's not so chaotic.
Well, interesting with what you're saying, because isn't that sort of disconnecting from this sort of hive conversation of the internet and social media and going more into yourself, making the world smaller in a way?
Yeah, it requires you to do that. In fact, you can't successfully write if you're consuming anything. media, audio, I mean, you could do sort of light music that's non-conceptual, but I think it's important more than ever, again, not just in Corona, but in the age of social media and echo chambery media consumption, to just sit down and be with your own thoughts. And writing is a way to do that if you're someone like me who is just sort of sense of life averse to meditation.
Yeah, I hate meditation too. Is there anything else you all want to address? Either you wants to address in this segment, or are you ready to move on?
Ready.
All right, let's move on.
Do it.
We can finally talk about it. We're really going to do it. It's not going to be a joke this time when I throw it to it. We're really going to talk about Tom Brady being on the Buccaneers in Belichick Your Premises.
Go talk to the geniuses that are online. What was the condition to rule and control? The media sells it, and you leave the role. Mental wounds still screaming, driving me insane. I'm going off the rails on a crazy train.
Recorded live during the coronavirus pandemic of 2020, it's time to Belichick Your Premises. And I opened up like that because obviously it's not football season and we usually record during some sort of game. And also, we don't know when games are ever going to happen again. I'm not convinced that the NFL season is even going to happen again. And if I'm being quite honest, there's about 10% of me that kind of doesn't want it to happen. Because 10% of me kind of wants Tom Brady to go, you know what, fuck it, I'm just going to retire, and he never plays in another team's jersey. Because the best way to describe this right now is, you know, besides reading the article I wrote about it, which is sort of my more rational thoughts, my less emotional thoughts, the best way to describe my experiences are life doesn't feel real right now. I can't believe we're locked in our homes, and I can't believe Tom Brady's not on the Patriots anymore. The idea of him playing on another team, not the idea of us having another quarterback. I'm well prepared to watch the team and having the Patriots have another quarterback. But having that concurrently go on with Brady being on another team doesn't seem real to me. That's not a thought I can wrap my head around. That's not an idea I can wrap my head around. Because there's just so much, like, I watched, you know, we're recording this on 3/29. I watched on 3/28 the 28-3 Super Bowl, right? Because it was 3/28 day, and I didn't got shit else to do, so I was like, all right, maybe I'll feel better now. To me, the ability to come back is the Patriot way. But Brady created so much of the Patriot way, so where does the Patriot way diverge from Brady is Brady going to be able to do that on another team? Are the Patriots going to be able to do that without Brady? There's so many questions I have in my mind that it doesn't seem real. I don't know if it'll even feel real when he's playing for the Buccaneers. And let me be clear before, you know, I throw it to both of you to get your thoughts, and then I'll give my thoughts on what I think will likely happen and what I think some of the concerns are. But I think him going to the Buccaneers is the best worst-case scenario. And what I mean by that is, ideally, he would have stayed and retired and never played for another team. But if he's going to go to another team, the Buccaneers are the least offensive team, and they're in the NFC.
The least offensive team.
What
does offensive mean in this context?
I mean, I don't have a reason to hate the Buccaneers.
Hmm.
There are a couple other teams, like maybe he could have gone to the Arizona Cardinals and I wouldn't have cared. But think about the teams being thrown around. Like, how fucking terrible would it have been if he went to the Los Angeles Chargers?
What about the Raiders?
Well, that's what I mean. With the whole Tuck rule and everything, can you imagine if he went to Las Vegas to play for the Raiders? Can you imagine how terrible it would have been? But then he went to the Buccaneers and you're like, oh, okay, whatever. You know, you're not on the Patriots, and that sucks, and I can't wrap my head around it, but at least it's not the Raiders. At least it's not the Chargers. At least it's not the Colts. And how about that, Philip Rivers siding with the Colts, right? You got to feel bad for Jacoby Brissett.
Come back to New England.
No. We'll talk about it, but I am good with Jarrett Stidham. Anyway, Daniel, what are your reactions to this, and then we'll go to William's reactions.
It's interesting because I prepared myself to have a rather emotional reaction to it, but I ended up not having a significant emotional reaction. I think because the not knowing what was going to happen to me was more anxiety driving than the knowing part. And so as soon as I knew, I had this very brief but intense flash of grief, I think, sense of loss. And then within a couple hours, I was basically just, that was the reality of the situation. Tom Brady's a Buccaneer now. Okay, moving on. How do we figure out what to do from this point?
Very Bill Belichick of you.
I was going to say, I think it's because I'm, in terms of my Patriots spirit animal, I'm more Belichick than Brady, and I think you're more Brady than Belichick. And so it was very much just, all right, well, this is the new normal, and I got used to it, and let's figure out where we go from here. And partially because I have no animus toward Tom Brady. I think his decision, I'm sure he's doing it within his hierarchy of values, and I'm sure Belichick made his decision within his hierarchy of values, and two rational people can disagree and go different directions, and that's fine. Like, that's, to use a phrase from earlier, Justin, that's kind of life-affirming, where they didn't have to have this spat in the media, they didn't have to be these horrible things said about each other, and there didn't have to be a big breakup. It was just, no, we disagreed, and so we're choosing different paths.
And I think, you know, maybe, bravo. Daniel, maybe you're having the emotional reaction you're having, and I've had a similar emotional reaction to it. Maybe it's because now that the dust has settled and you really look at it, doesn't this make sense when you think of Tom Brady? If his number one thing is to win, and the Patriots are in a year where they don't have as much money to pay people and people were going to leave because they're coming down from winning a few championships, and this is the natural cycle of a franchise. Even though Belichick's good at, you know, not being in the rebuilding cycle as much as other teams, you still have that a little bit. You know, remember there was still the lulls in between the years of winning three titles twice for the Patriots. Doesn't it make sense that Brady would go somewhere where he's only got a couple years left to be able to play, where he would want to go with the optimal chance of winning? Isn't that consistent with what we know about him? And don't we have to say, well, if we wanted to have him be so focused on winning for 20 years, we have to accept that this is part of who he is as well?
I think that's right. It's completely consistent. It makes total sense to me. As much as I didn't want him to do it, it makes enough sense that it doesn't bother me that he did it in a bad way. And let's be honest, what do we know? What else do we know about Tom Brady, especially in his later years? He's very brand oriented and marketing oriented. and he started the 199 Productions, and he's doing the TB12 fitness stuff, and now he's on a team that is literally TB. Literally TB. It seems on brand for Brady in so many ways.
So what you're saying is he's going to get tuberculosis.
He has to. He has to. And he's trademarked TB times TB, for instance. Yes.
Sorry, I mean, I don't hate him for it, but it's just, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to.
I know. And maybe my emotions will change the moment I watch him throw his first pass in a Buccaneers uniform.
That's the other thing. I've seen every pass Tom Brady has thrown. Do I have to watch two games every Sunday now? William, what's your reactions to all of this?
I was going
to
say, as someone who isn't, you know, a fanatical Justin and Daniel type.
But he's a Michigan guy.
Right.
I don't know. I am not as attached as you guys are, right? You know, I've only been following the Patriots loosely Brady's first few years, and then more and more as time went on, right? So for me, this is very much part of the game, right? And I know a lot of people, for certain players, get really attached to seeing them in certain uniforms, and I just haven't. Not in football. I definitely have in hockey before. It's always strange to see longtime goalies in different uniforms and things like that. But, you know, time passes and I've gotten used to it. So it hasn't affected me. And as far as whether it's a smart move, I think it's a great move for Brady. And time will tell if it's a great move for the Patriots. I think if it wasn't going to be this year, it was definitely going to be next year that something was going to have to change.
So, yeah, we'll talk about that. But something I want to ask both of you, and Daniel more than William, is will you continue to follow and support the Patriots now that Tom Brady is gone? And, Daniel, an add-on for you is, because I'm assuming it's yes because of Bill Belichick, when Belichick inevitably retires, will you continue to support the Patriots?
Yeah, for now, definitely. And anyone who this talk about people who are like, well, I guess I'm going to watch a different team now or whatever. It's like, okay.
Yeah, you mean really. My parents wanting to give up the season tickets and my mom, quote, literally said, I'd rather spend the money to go see Brady play a couple times in Tampa Bay. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
I don't get that at all. But that being said, I think I've said on Belichick Your Premises before that coming into football when I did and because the way I did, which is the attachment to Belichick first and then to Brady later, and not growing up in New England and not having that culture around me, I've said before, I don't know what's going to happen when they both go, if I'm still going to be as big a fan as I am or if I'll be a more casual fan, because I like watching both of them so much and what they do so much. So it's conceivable to me that when Belichick leaves, so do I. But it depends on the context of that moment. What else is going on? What other is there someone who's brought up the coaching tree? Like, is it Josh McDaniel's team at that point? Or is he already gone? Or, you know, is the Belichick the Younger takeover?
What is his name? If you're going to say Steve Belichick.
Steve Belichick, who looks and sounds almost identical to his father, especially if you close your eyes. My God, they sound the same. So I don't know. It's very contextual, but I do think about that. For this season, I'm still all in go Pats. Absolutely. But I will be interested to watch Tom Brady.
William, do you have any answer to that question, or you don't care because you're a Lions fan?
Yeah, partly I don't care because I'm a Lions fan. But I too have fallen in love with Belichick. So I think I think I'll still be watching the games. I'll still be invested in the team. But after Belichick leaves, I don't know. Because this is the thing, you know. People can accuse people of being fair-weather fans, right? But the important thing is, what are you connecting with? And with the Patriots, it certainly was Brady and Belichick and that interaction and how the team is built and how the team is coached that brought me to watch every week. So,
right, so it's sort of good.
If those people leave and it changes, then yeah, it wouldn't be interesting to me anymore.
And that's the difficult thing I've thought about for myself, where it's sort of like a corporation, where if somebody builds a corporation and then their son inherits it and he changes it or destroys it or doesn't run it the same way, is it even the same corporation anymore? And I think that's why we're entering a pivot point in the history of the league and the history of the Patriots, just because, you know, the Patriots' success is synonymous with so much of the league. You know, they have they're tied for most Super Bowl titles with the Steelers. They're one ahead of the Cowboys and the 49ers. So when you look at, first of all, this year, there's a question of what becomes of the quarterback position. Is Jarrett Stidham able to replace Brady? And I don't mean he's going to be exactly the same as Brady, but there are some things within the Belichick system that the quarterback is responsible for. When you say do your job, there are elements of decision-making and leadership that a quarterback must have in the Belichick system. I think we've seen other people have it. I think Jacoby Brissett had it. I think Jimmy Garoppolo had it. I don't know if they had it on the same level as Tom Brady. I'm not saying they did, but they had elements of it, and that's why Belichick drafted them. And presumably Stidham has that as well. From everything that's coming out of the Patriots camp, they're saying that. But then there's also what William was just referring to. And this is what happens post-Belichick. Can the culture continue? I think a lot of people in New England are believing the culture is solely Tom Brady. And they think that who the Patriots are was solely Tom Brady. And he certainly helped create it. But you can't underplay how much Belichick created it. And how, you know, he's the coach. How much did Belichick teach Brady? And I think that's what people are forgetting, right? It was 20 years, but how much of that was Belichick teaching Brady and Brady becoming who he was because of Belichick? And, you know, Belichick improved because of Brady. But remember, Belichick's how old now? Can somebody look that up real quick? And when Brady started, he was in his, you know, early 20s, 22, 23. It was really like a father raising a son. You know, Kraft has always said he's like another son to me, the team owner. So I don't think we can underplay that. And when I see articles such as the one Devin McCourty wrote, I know I sent that to you, Daniel. I don't know if you ever read it. But when I read that, you didn't read it?
I did.
Oh, okay. Well, when I read that, I was finally excited for the new season again. Because I was like, oh, wait, there are other people who have been here a long time. And there are other people who care about continuing the Patriot way. And I think that's why it feels like a little bit of a betrayal that Brady left, because it's like, well, don't you want to transmit this to the next generation? Well, no, he's never cared about that. That's why we're saying this is consistent with Tom Brady. But when you see someone like McCourty, and if you haven't, anyone, go read that article in the Players Tribune. And he says, the new challenge is, how do we get this to continue beyond us? How do we have this last and not have the Patriots, and he doesn't say this part, but not have the Patriots go the way of the Cowboys, go the way of the 49ers who are just now getting good again. How do we make this last? How do we transmit this to a new generation? And that is one of the greatest challenges in the history of humankind. Isn't that the problem with America right now? That we started a certain way and the ideals are not being transmitted, the culture is not being transmitted across? Well, that's the new challenge. And to me, that's what we're going to look into now and see what's interesting. It's going to start with Jarrett Stidham, seeing if he's the guy. And if he's not, who can be the guy to do that? Can we find that person? And then is McCourty able to in his next few years with the help of hopefully Julian Edelman stays around? Although I've also seen people say, I've seen Patriots fans say, I want Edelman to be traded to Tampa Bay to be with Brady. It's like, what are we fucking stands shipping these people in television series? We want Edelman on our team to teach the new wide receivers. Ideally, Edelman would teach Jacoby Meyer, would teach N'Keal Harry how to be those next guys so they can continue on the Patriot way. That's what we need. And they've done it in the past. I mean, Welker and Edelman transitioned, right? So can't we do that again? And McCourty wasn't in the first three Super Bowls. Super Bowl wins. Neither was Hightower, right? We've had these players before. We need to find those new guys to continue it on, and hopefully Belichick can find the coach to continue it on as well. And that's why I'm not averse to the idea of Steve Belichick being the next guy.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the concept of what makes something what it is, i.e. what attributes have to be there in order for it to be the same thing, and then also how do we continue valuing a thing as it changes, are two great philosophical points that we have to deal with outside of sports, certainly, but that are heightened in sports because of its stylization, right? In terms of value hierarchy, we certainly, I don't think anyone on the show believes in the concept of unconditional love, for instance. If people change in a way that they're no longer a value to us, then we no longer love them.
Aaron Hernandez.
Love is a response to values. Aaron Hernandez. Thank you for putting a very fine point on that, Justin. And so if the Patriots totally changed their value system and became, you know, the Jets, I wouldn't want to watch them anymore.
Fuck the Jets.
And I'm not saying that their system or their culture is the only potential value you can have in a sports team. We've talked before about how location and culture of a city and what you grew up with is a legitimate value. I don't think it can be the sole value or the predominant value, but it is part of the value.
Well, I get mad about Tom Brady wanting to go to Florida? He's literally an hour and a half from me. I can't get mad about that.
Tom Brady comes closer to me. Yes. So all those things are competing values. And at some point, a thing does change so much that it is no longer what it was before. Human beings can change so much they're no longer what they were before. Sports franchises, music, art, all sorts of things. That's why we have different movements in art, right? Different styles of music. So it's important questions to grapple with, and I think you're only going to get them grappled with on Belichick Your Premises.
Very true, very true. One final question here before we end Belichick Your Premises and then end the episode in a second here. This season, and for the rest of Brady's career, how do you see things going? So I'll answer first. I'm really interested to see what happens with Brady. I'm not sure he's going to win another Super Bowl. I have a little fantasy where he goes to the Super Bowl against us and loses. I think that would be amazing.
The first Super Bowl tie.
I don't know. I would want to win. And it would be like, the reason it would be hilarious is because there's been all of this. They've wanted to have the changing of the guards and the passing of the torch. And they wanted, Brady to lose in the Super Bowl to Nick Foles or Carson Wentz and have him be the next one. And they wanted that with Matt Ryan. And then they wanted it with
Goff.
Goff, yeah. That's how bad Goff is. I forgot his name. But they wanted it, right? They've wanted this for years, right? They were also hoping this year we might play Garoppolo and the torch would be passed, right? You see the media writing this narrative. How hilarious would it be if Tom Brady takes Tampa Bay to the Super Bowl in Tampa Bay and then he loses to Jared Stidham?
That would be a passing of a torch of some sort.
The media's collective heads would explode. So I have that little fantasy, but I'm not sure he'll get there. I mean, he's in a really tough division, right? He has to play Drew Brees twice a year, which I'm excited to go see that game live. I will see that game live. Even if I have to pay for, the top deck cheap tickets, I'll still go and see that game. I mean, we've wanted to see Brady versus Brees for how long, Daniel?
So long.
Maybe you should come down and go to the game, man.
That's possible. I'll look into that.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. And I also think Brady, it's going to be interesting. I don't know if he's going to see the same level of discipline on Tampa Bay with a different coach that he's used to from Patriots players and Patriots teams.
Although, on that point, he could have gone to a lot worse coaches than Bruce Arians.
Oh, 100%.
Arians known for keeping a pretty tight ship. Is that the phrase? Keeping a tight ship?
It is, but it's also funny because they have the giant ship in the stadium.
Didn't think about that, but yes. Running a tight ship, that's the phrase.
Yeah.
And for instance, coming out and saying there was no way they were signing Antonio Brown because he's not a culture fit, for instance. So I think from that angle, maybe it's not as good, but it's certainly not the worst it could be. And the thing I'll say to add to what you're saying, Justin, is it's kind of a year of no excuses in a certain sense for Brady, because if you look at the offensive weapons around him, he's fully loaded in Tampa Bay. Now, their offensive line has been bleh, so they got to fix that real quick. But it's not going to be like last year, I think, where he's the second or third most accurate passer in the league, but has the most drops by any receiver in the league. It's pretty much put up or shut up, right?
Yeah, I mean, certainly last season, I mean, we've gone over it over and over, and it could go in more in depth, but the number of things that went wrong for the Patriots offense to be what it was just a weird congruence of events, from Gronk leaving to Malcolm Mitchell getting hurt a couple years ago and having to retire, to all the injuries, to drug relapses, to Antonio Brown going insane. There was just so much that Brady could chalk that up to. And it resulted in a first-round playoff loss, which even if Edelman just hadn't dropped that ball, they still could have beaten the Titans. The defense played phenomenally. So yeah. It was just so many things that led to that. So, yeah, there are no excuses this year. And that's one of the interesting things I want to see. Because if Brady does well, how bad is Jameis Winston? Because it's the same offense Winston was working in, and he had, what, as many interceptions as he did touchdowns?
So if 30 Brady for 30.
30. Yeah, that's what I thought it was. Imagine having the 30 for 30 on Jameis Winston after Brady makes that offense look good. And on the converse, I don't think the Patriots are going to be as bad as people think they are. I went through their schedule, and being generous, because, you know, I there was a lot of things I said I don't know how they're going to develop with certain teams and with Jarrett Stidham, right? I put them at 10-6 or 11-5, and they could be better than that. Now, they could be worse than that if Stidham shits the bed, but I think they're going to be better than people think. I think they're going to compete for the division. I think it's going to be tough with the Bills. I think the Bills are really good. And I think they're going to be tough defensive battles. But I think if Stidham develops, they could win the division again. And I think they're going to go 10-6 or 11-5.
I think they're 10-6 with Brian Hoyer.
And they may do that. If Stidham really sucks, they could put Hoyer in.
The real question is, to William, are the Lions better than 8-8 this year?
Even if they are, they will lose the first round, as is tradition.
As is tradition. I was going to ask you earlier if there's really Lions fans or just people who watch the Lions.
I think that it's some sort of twisted sick joke after all these years. What is it, about 25 years? So you almost sadistically watch them, but you know that any hope you invest in them will be torn away from you at the end. It's like watching a horror film, I think.
Watching a horror film where the Lions are the perennial virgin.
Yep.
All right, William, do you have anything to say about what you think is going to happen with Brady in Tampa Bay or the Patriots without Brady?
I think, Daniel, I have a little more pessimistic view than both of you guys, but Daniel mentioned the offensive line in Tampa Bay. I think that's, if they don't fix that, which I don't know how they're going to do right now. I mean, we got plenty of time before the season starts, but that's going to be hard for an older Brady. He's already slow, right? We comically talk about when you see him run, it looks like he's running at like 0.25x, right? That could be, he could get injured, right? If they don't fix the offensive line quickly enough, we could see a Brady that's in two or three games and then injured for the rest of the season.
All right. Sounds good, gentlemen. I think we got all our thoughts out there. I think people will be satisfied finally knowing our reactions, and hopefully we'll be able to have more of these segments in the fall. I hope. Thanks for stopping by and Belichicking your premises. For now, we're on to the Great Suppression.
Love.
my face, your face, instant face. Go talk to whoever you want that does that stuff.
All right, gentlemen, what did we learn this trip? William?
I learned that Brady going to Tampa Bay is not part of the Great Suppression.
Daniel?
I learned that in the event of apocalypse, I'm basically collecting food for the nearest warlord. Justin?
I learned that apparently I need to take a closer look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive line. I'm not going to lie, you guys caught me a little bit out with that commentary, although I don't know the name of one player on their offensive line, which is probably a clue it's pretty terrible. So I'm going to do a little research on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive line. I've actually Googled it right now.
It's no Lions offensive line, but...
Their offensive line is literally a line that people just look at and be like, God damn, that's offensive. Because it's terrible. But the Buccaneers one got marginally better last year, but it's still like in the lower half of the league.
Is it better or worse than the Texans' offensive line?
The Texans have foregone an offensive line for years. You didn't know that? They just
snap the ball
to Watson and watch him be tackled.
That's why I use them as my standard.
Yeah. They actually rank 33rd in the NFL for offensive lines.
That's offensive, man.
Yeah. So we hope you learned something this week, and if you did, you can share it with us all over the social medias at The Midside or in our Discord channel, where we recently had a Patreon-exclusive chat with the hosts. That was interesting. I liked that. I think we should do that more, maybe in a little earlier time when I'm not a zombie. But I thought it was all good. It was interesting. You can join the Discord, and you can become part of the Patreon-exclusive chat channel by giving money on patreon.com/themidside. Give us a couple bucks. Helps us keep the lights on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can go to themidside.com/podcast and binge listen to all the old shows back when I used to swear a lot. Mm-hmm. And you can also go to themidside.com/store to get your Midside merch. Give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and Google Play and everywhere where podcasts are distributed. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us with our libertarian friends, who we gladly walk into battle with during these great suppressive times. So thanks for listening, libertarians. And tell a friend about the show, especially if your friends are also skeptical of what's going on right now in the corona economy during the Great Suppression. Let them know that they have allies. And we're here in the Midside. Until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a corona-free day.
I think we forgot to mention that I think for the first time in his career, Tom Brady will make more money in a year than his wife.
Yeah, we didn't mention any of that.
With his $50 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
Go, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting paid. I'm looking at the depth chart right now for their offensive line, the Buccaneers, and yeah, holy crap. They're like practice squad guys. This is pretty bad. I'm kind of worried for him right now, to be honest.
It'll be like what happens if you were to walk up to Larry King and pull one of his suspenders really hard and then snap it back and he just turns to dust. It's going to be Brady this year.
I mean, I always told you I was kind of worried his career was going to end with him just getting nailed one time and injured so badly he can't get back up.
Yeah. Sad reacts only.